Thanks, Jim. I'm going to thank Jim and DuPont Pioneer for asking me to be a part of this today. This is definitely not in my normal wheelhouse. For those of you who are familiar with Monty Python, this is time for something completely different. I got a picture here. This is me and my two kids harvesting this fall soybeans in central Iowa. Our family's been on the farm in central Iowa, northeast of Ames in Story County. I'm the fifth generation. We started farming there in 1880. And for 11 generations, since we came off the boat and moved further west, our family's been farming in the United States. So farming picked me. I didn't necessarily pick it, but I'm certainly very proud to be part of the industry. So what I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to hit on four major themes. And what we're doing on our farm to conserve and manage the resources that impact our land, water, how we're using nutrients, and kind of my view of, as a farmer, the importance of what we do on the legacy going forward. And that first picture you saw, those two little people, those are my kids. They're very important to me, and I want them to be able to do the same thing that Dad does if they would so choose. So the first thing I want to talk about is land, and the previous presentation is fascinating. A couple years ago, I had the opportunity to travel to China with the Iowa Corn Growers Association and see a lot of corn being grown in China, and just amazing how the leaps and bounds that are happening in that country. And I always thought to myself, I hope they get good at this, but not too good. But anyway, the world's a fast-changing place. I think we all know that. When I was getting ready to come down here this morning, I was watching TV in my hotel room, and I saw Bob Dylan doing an ad for IBM. And who would ever would have thought that? Okay. But the world changes, and especially now we have social media. We're able to become a reporter at any time, share things with people throughout the world, and I think that's a good thing. I see social media discussions about farming. Often, where's our food coming from? What are these farmers doing? Pointing out things that people don't understand, and it gives us an opportunity to share some of the things that we're doing on our farms. And with that, we're getting under more scrutiny. As a farmer, there's more of a spotlight on us of what we're doing, you know, not only from a social standpoint, but from a regulatory standpoint. And it's important that we're ahead of the curve when it comes to some of these regulatory pressures that come from the public, because it's important, in my view, that agricultural production, especially in the Middle West of the United States, remains something that we are free and unencumbered to do, because food production and the safety of food is incredibly important to our country's future and the world's future as well. We would never want to get into a situation that we've done with our energy policy as we've done to do that to food, where energy is produced in some of the most unstable places in the world. We don't want to choke off our own production in the most productive areas of the world. So that's my little bit of a soapbox there. But some of the things that we've done on our farm and in direct response to information that we receive, you know, many of you involved in research, it does trickle down wonderfully to farmers. I mean, I read research all the time and try to get as much information as I possibly can. And I think back over, you know, the course of the time where my grandfather would go to extension meetings and things, and we've moved from a time where we turned all the soil black in the fall with full more bold plowing to disc chiseling, disc ripping. Now we're more into some vertical tillage, and in some cases leaving some ground untilled for the next year. And those are things that were unheard of in north central Iowa in the last generation. We've got very heavy soils, high organic component to those soils. They don't drain well, they don't warm up quickly in the spring, and the answer was always turn them black in the fall. What we've done is to try to really assess on a field-by-field basis tillage needs. We don't have a broadcast one-size-fits-all every field approach like we did in the past. And we're working through some challenges that come with trying to institute new practices. It is difficult to try to grow, especially a continuous corn situation when you're trying to manage residue and trying to heat that soil up in the spring. But we're working through that. Another couple other things that we've started doing on our farm, and one thing I'm really proud of, as I mentioned, we've been on a lot of this ground for a number of generations, and it allows me a little bit of flexibility. I'm not as tied to the movements at the market, i.e., we own a lot of this ground, so my profit margin has a little bit more wiggle room to it on some pieces, and therefore I'm able to take a little bit more ground out of production than some of my colleagues are able to. And what I've done in some cases, and I'll show it, and you can see it here on the right of this picture, that's actually ground that's been returned to actual native Iowa prairie grass. I'm very proud of the steps that we've taken in conservation and removing some ground from row crop production and putting it back into a more native situation, things that just were not intended for row crop production. Next thing I've got on there is you talk about a long-term view. You know, it's difficult in farming. We have a lot of things coming at us, a lot of recommendations, a lot of things you could do. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that when it comes to resource management and conservation? But nothing in farming has a quick return. It just doesn't. It takes a long time, and I think of cover crops are something that we're really starting to work with. But they're difficult to understand exactly how that process is going to work, especially in today's market environment. Establishing a cover crop can be between $30 and $50 an acre. Well, in a lot of cases, especially on rented ground, that erases your profit margin. So we have to work closely and try to manage all the short-term economic realities with a long-term view. You know, this is a very, it's not a static job by any means. There's a lot of factors that come into play. I have on there new approaches. A couple of things that we're doing on our farm are not new at all. They're a return to some things that are done in the past. I have here a photo of some native prairie grasses that we planted, and of course this is not anything that's cultivated. This is just left. This is wildlife habitat. It's erosion control, it's sediment containment, and all those things. But in some other areas, I've gone back to actually growing oats and growing wheat, which in north central Iowa there is no commercial market for. You don't take them to the elevator, there is just no market. So I've had to seek out things. People who have horses, excellent market for oats. And I've found that a lot of people who have horses have a lot of disposable income. And they are willing to be extricated from their money easily. So I've really hit upon that. And that leaves that ground that's a little bit less suitable for row crop production. When you have oats, that solid seeded crop holds that soil a lot better. And a lot less need for in-season crop inputs. And when I say a lot less need, the answer is zero. I plant it in March and that's what I do with it. That's all she gets. And it's worked out well the last few years. We also have bale the oat straw, and those same people that are excited to have the oats for grain get really excited about the oat straw too, or the wheats of the oat straw as well, which another case of me being able to extract a little money from them, which is a good deal for both of us because I have something they need too. Also done it with wheat. Wheat's interesting. I've actually happened upon the ability to grow continuous wheat through the use of actually harvesting the seed head and just baling the straw and letting the seed head fall, and it has a tendency to reseed itself. And I've done that for 3 years now, sold the wheat straw off of about 10 acres and had a lot of good luck with that. So these are things I think out of the box. I mean, in the practical sense of farming, there's a lot of stuff that we have plans for in the summer or in the winter time that, you know, the weather just does not cooperate with us. So we have to have the ability to kind of change on the go. Last thing I have there is we talk about conserving our land and thinking different about land from a farmer's perspective. We all have to be on board. And as a farmer, I like to think of myself as a solutions person. Anybody can point out a problem, and those of you involved in research or academia understand that the world is full of people who can point out problems. There's very few people in the world that are really interested in solutions. And I'll touch on this in a little bit, but there's some controversy in my neck of the woods as it relates to how farmers impact surface water supplies. And there's a lot of controversy about how that's such a problem and who should pay for that problem. But I haven't seen a lot in the way of solutions from those people that point out the problem. And as a farmer and as a person in the industry who has a lot of passion for this industry, I want solutions. So I think it's important that we all maintain that desire to find solutions and not always just point out the problem. This picture here is a photo of an area in the foreground that I've established with grass. This previously had been row cropped. We're now left that area. You can see, maybe it might not show up so well on the screen, but to the right near the trees, you can see some old soybean rows. And this area was so susceptible to erosion that we just retired it. There's about 9 acres in sum total here. And when I did this, this was in 2011 when I started this. Now, if you're familiar with land values in north central Iowa, 9 acres in 2011 was worth quite a bit of money. It's still worth quite a bit of money today. But this is something that we've done voluntarily. This is not enrolled in any government program, so no taxpayer money is involved in this. This is just my desire to do what I feel is the right thing on land that we've owned in our generation for a number of years. And in the background, you can see some oats growing. And in the far background, you can see some wheat. In amongst, this is actually a DuPont Pioneer production field. So, you know, you have a little bit of everything here. And then way back in the back, there's 9 acres of grass that we just leave alone. So I've got some grass area that we do bale and sell grass bales, have some oats, some wheat, and I have some native grasses growing in amongst a commercial production field. All things that are possible. You know, this is all possible, and I'm no expert. I'm just a farmer from Iowa. These are things that I've come up with on my own by looking at the soil and understanding that erosion and the degradation of that soil is not a good thing. Here's another photo of my native grass plot, and I thought this was interesting because in the background we have the windmills. The commercial wind industry is tremendously a tremendous industry in Iowa, and it's growing. And I always like to see us being able to venture into new opportunities, and the wind industry is definitely that. So that's just kind of an interesting photo there. Talk a little bit about water. I took this picture 2 years ago in the spring of 2013. Those of you who are familiar with the weather pattern in the upper Midwest in the spring of 2013, it was quite challenging. I got very familiar with this rain gauge that spring. Sometimes the rain gauge is your friend, sometimes it's your enemy, but it always tells you a story and it never lies. And on this date, it told me that I had about 1.5 inches of rain on top of a tremendous amount of rain. But water is always something that a farmer is concerned about, the protection of water. How do we protect water? And this is where the controversy comes in Iowa, and if you're involved in row crop production throughout the United States, you got to keep a close eye on the events with the lawsuit related to the Des Moines Water Works, because it has the potential to have an impact upon everyone in agriculture. And my response to that is simply, the protection of water is extremely important to me as a farmer. I drink the water that comes off my fields. I'm the first user of it. Okay, the wells under this ground, my kids drink it. So it's extremely important. But how do we protect it? The previous presenter talked about nutrients, timing, type, the right source. You know, the timing of application is extremely important. And we're gathering more and more information about site-specific agriculture. Those areas of fields that are deficient in nutrients, those where you've built nutrients, we don't need the widespread broadcast applications anymore. So protecting that water is extremely important. And the things that we've done on our fields and on our farm is to embrace this technology that's available to us. Variable rate technology, soil mapping, yield monitor information, all those things tie back to the next year's crop recipe. The conservation of water, where I'm at, you know, we dry land farm, so we don't use any irrigation, okay? Typically, we get plenty of water. Most years, we get too much. But as farmers and people in this industry, you know, the conservation of water is important throughout the United States and the world. A couple of years ago, I was on an ag tour in the state of California, and I saw an almond farm. And I was talking with the farmer there, and he was very proud of, he was organic, and very mindful of the resources that he used on his farm. And I asked him, well, how much water does it take to grow almonds in California? And he responded, 51 inches. Okay, I can grow three tremendous dry land corn crops on 51 inches of rain. And then as he was talking to his group, I was kind of wandering around and not paying attention to what he was saying because I was interested in what was going on in the periphery. And I saw growing in the fence line a cactus. That was native to that area, not almond trees. So I think as we work through this growing world and the population becomes bigger and bigger, sometimes we got to think about those things. What is Mother Nature telling us if she's growing a cactus out there? Maybe almonds isn't the best use of that water. I don't know. I'm not an almond grower in California. I'm sure they would argue with me. I am a corn grower in Iowa, which is a grass. And a couple hundred years ago, the native vegetation in my area were grasses and legumes. Well, I also happen to grow soybeans. You know, just food for thought there. Water improvement, you know, what can we do to improve water as farmers? You know, what are the things, how can I make the water that falls from the sky, goes off my field into a water source, better than it was when it fell there? Or at least not harm it. You know, the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. And that's kind of what I live by, do no harm. So what we've done on our farm in recent years, we've done some land retirement, back to solid seeded crops in some areas. In the last 2 years, we've placed about 7 miles of 50-foot wide grass waterways in highly erodible areas to trap that sediment, to slow the water's speed down, all those things to act as that natural coffee filter to try to reduce our impact on water from our farms that are going into surface waters. We've also established a practice of having buffer strips around streams and ponds of at least 90 feet. Now, again, these are things that we're doing on our own. We're not receiving any type. I'm not getting involved in government programs on this because I want the freedom to be able to build it the way I want to build it. There are a tremendous number of cost share programs out there for farmers to use, and I think that's wonderful. But as a farmer who's been on this ground for a long time and his family's been on this ground for a long time, I think it's our duty to do what we feel is best, and I think what we're doing far exceeds anything that the NRCS would come up with. Now, as far as management of water, this is kind of the sticky wicket a little bit. What we do to manage water in our farms is we have a tremendous amount of artificial tile drainage installed. And in the farm in north central Iowa where we farm, we would not be economically competitive if we didn't have that situation. We have to drain these soils. They're heavy, black, Nicollet, Clarion, Webster soils. A lot of organic matter, and they hold a lot of water. So with our artificial drainage, it's important that we keep in mind, and with the technology that's available to us today, when we lay a plan out, that how we're laying that plan out and where we're discharging that water is done in an environmentally safe and friendly manner. And I think we're learning more about how to do that. I'm happy with a lot of the results we're seeing. I had the Iowa Soybean Association do some testing on our tile outlets this spring, and I'm happy to report that the tile waters running through our farms came back from the lab as drinking water safe. Okay? We could drink that water. It's just as safe as what's coming out of the tap. I wouldn't recommend it, but we could do it, you know. These are things to keep in mind because management of water is important to keep that water table low so when we do get these 3-4 inch rain events, our fields are better able to handle that load of water. We reduce erosion through the use of this artificial tile drainage. And of course, it's a controversial topic and is an issue that's unfortunately in the state of Iowa going to get adjudicated in the courts, which again, I don't know if that's necessarily a solutions-based process. That's sure a good way for lawyers to make money. But I'm looking for solutions, not for problems. And what we've done on our farm is to institute a lot of tile drainage over the last few years. And we've been able to increase yields each of the last 3 years through various weather conditions. And I think a lot of it's due to our nutrient management and our water management. We're using the same amount of resources, but we're getting better production. So I think we need to be careful when we're trying to broadly regulate water and water use when it comes to row crop production. Here's an aerial photograph of some of these grass waterways. This farm here is highly productive soil. If you're familiar with the CSR chart in Iowa, this has got about an 89 CSR. So we did take some ground that has an 89 CSR and put it back to grass because we felt that was the right thing to do. This waterway system through here is a total of 4 miles in this farm, and the large grass area there is about 6 acres. That's just something we've done. We've instituted this in the last 3 years. Nutrients. The previous presenter talked about timing type and testing in the nation of China. And the neat thing about chemistry, it's a universal language. What works there will work here. What works here will work there. So the type of nutrients that we're using today, we're using nitrogen in much smaller amounts than we did when I was a kid, growing up on the farm in the 80s. Anhydrous would go on in the fall, and I can remember hearing numbers of 240 pounds of N, 250. I can grow 2 crops with that now, okay? And we were lucky to get 150 bushels per acre. Now this past fall, we averaged about 220 bushels per acre on our ground, and we're using about 120 pounds of nitrogen through anhydrous ammonia, UAN, and we did use a little urea. So we've had different sources and different timings. The most profitable piece of equipment that I think we've purchased in the last few years is the nitrogen side dress bar, which has given us the ability to apply that nitrogen in UAN form during the growing season when that crop needs it. And we've reduced our overall nitrogen load in the last 10 years by about 15%. All the while we've been, increasing yield. So I'm pretty excited about that. And what I'm doing is nothing different than a lot of farmers are doing. But the research tells us this is important. That's what we're doing. Here's just a picture of some technology we use, and we can use the testing. I know I'm running short on time, but the last thing I want to touch on is, as a farmer, this is not just a job to a farmer. It's a legacy, and this is my family. That's my wife and my 2 kids and myself, and we're standing in an area that we've returned to some grass waterways and things. And the hat I'm wearing has a little logo ANF. If you're familiar with the program that the University of Iowa has on their football helmets, it stands for America Needs Farmers. And as a farmer, I take great responsibility in our, where we fit in the United States and in the world and what we do. I have a tremendous sense of the social contract that the world gives us and what responsibility that has, as a farmer, to maintain our resource base and pass it on to the next generation. Last picture there, that's me in the fall of 1980 at the Farm Progress Show that was held just down the road from us. I was looking at some pumpkins there and a shock of corn, had my bibs on, and I wanted to be a farmer then. And I hope that, given the opportunity, or if that's their desire, that's what my children will have the opportunity to do too. I put my phone number and my email on there. I'm not an academic, I'm not a researcher, I'm a farmer, but I like to institute a lot of interesting things on our farm and see if they work. So if anybody ever has a question or would like to try something out or just bounce something off a farmer, there's my contact information. I really do appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. This is really neat. This is way out of my wheelhouse, but I've really enjoyed being here. And this is something I'll always remember, being able to be at a professional conference like that and being able to present, from my perspective. So thank you for that. And once again, if you would like to get a hold of me, there's all my contact information. So thank you.